I want to welcome everybody back. Happy Monday morning. I don't know where the donut cart went. It was supposed to be here by now, and I'm sorry about that. And anyway, we'll see if we can do that something better next Monday. Oh, so we're not here on Monday. Oh, watch out for political promises. I want to welcome the Commissioner Ellinger here, who has graciously agreed to come and greet us this morning. Just so people know the plan, there is no plan for any meetings between now and when we get back from the Easter break. I know it disappoints a lot of you. I'm sorry. We'll try to accommodate you on more weekends and nighttime meetings for those who feel disappointed about the tradition that this committee has created in the past. We do our best work at, I think, 5 in the morning. I know that. Today we're going to hopefully get through the rest of the side-by-sides. We may or may not get into a discussion about the Minnesota Choice that has been renamed Focused Project if we have time. At any rate, we're going to be at time certain out here by 10:45, and I know the thought of time certain is unique to this conference work, but we're going to try to do some of that for the benefit of everybody who has to get to Senate sessions and et cetera, and we do not plan to come back after that today. And Senator Hand will let us know his plans for when we come back. So, Commissioner Ellinger, welcome to the committee. We got a few minutes to hear from you, and it's nice to have you here to greet us. So, welcome.
Well, Chairman Abler, Chairman Hand, House and Senate conferees, I'm Ed Ellinger, Commissioner of Health for the Minnesota Department of Health, and thank you for inviting me to address the Omnibus Health and Human Services Conference Committee. I've been monitoring the activities of your progress, and certainly my staff have been here in person over the last week, so we've been keeping track of what's going on. I understand that you have a tough job to do in negotiating a middle ground between the House and Senate versions of the omnibus bill on behalf of your 191 colleagues in the House and Senate. So the stakes are ratcheting up not only to balance the state's budget, but also in balancing the needs and desires of your constituents and of all Minnesotans across the state. I work very closely with my colleagues, Commissioners Jensen and Rothman, on a number of issues as the three lead agencies in the health care cabinet for Governor Dayton. However, there are functions of health care that are unique to the Department of Health, where our mission is to protect and maintain and improve the health of all Minnesotans. We do that work every single day, whether it has been our preparation for the current flood season, tracking down the source of a mysterious infection like the one at the St. Cloud Hospital that we identified, helping to explain and control the latest disease outbreak, the measles that's ravaging some of the most vulnerable populations in our community, working to eliminate tobacco, the biggest killer in our society, collaborating with local communities to improve nutrition and increase physical activity as a way of reducing the burden of chronic disease in our state, or bringing a prevention focus to health reform activities, knowing that this is what really needs to be done if we are to reduce health care costs in this state. The Department of Health is recognized as one of the premier public health agencies in the country, and certainly one of my goals as commissioner is to maintain that lofty status. And we are recognized in that premier status for doing a variety of things, including our nationally recognized laboratories, which benefits not only Minnesotans but the entire country, for our surveillance and monitoring approaches, which are second to none in identifying foodborne illnesses and infectious disease outbreaks before they can harm large numbers of people. Our health economics program, which has the best information in the country in helping us identify cost-effective ways for providing high-quality health care. And our statewide health improvement program, which is nationally recognized as a model of how to bring public health framework to health reform. Our collaboration with local public health agencies, including the tribes, as a way of making sure public health services are effectively getting to the people who depend on those services for their individual health and for the health of their communities. And finally, providing grant funds to help with special high-risk and high-need populations, as well as providing services unavailable through other sources. Such things as home visiting, which has been identified as one of the major public health interventions in improving child health. Working with disparities, which is one of the issues that is bringing down this health status of in ranking of Minnesota, and family planning, which has been one of the most effective public health interventions in improving health and lowering costs. I've already spoken directly with both you, Representative Abler, and you, Senator Han, about many of these topics, and as you know, our staff has followed up with you as well. We pledge to continue those efforts in the coming weeks. I believe we all have a shared goal of making our healthcare system more accessible, more affordable, and with levels of unmatched quality. And we have the shared goal of making our communities the healthiest in the country. I look forward to working with all of you and certainly be available for any questions. Thank you.
Well, and it's nice you can come. Any comments for the commissioner or anybody? I've had some very good meetings with some of your staff in the last week or so, and even in the times before that. And so I know that we're pushing you as a department, and I know you're pushing us as a legislature. We've never had the challenges facing us that we have now, Commissioner, and you are certainly well aware of that. And so I appreciate them telling me what can't be done and what might be done in a different way. I really appreciated some of those chats. And as we get further into the details of our various proposals, even in terms of what staffing is sensible and prudent to work with, what happens if we do certain things, where is there some room to push, we'll be asking you questions like that. Maybe not you personally, but through your staff. But you're always welcome to come and greet us, and I appreciate your willingness to come today. Representative Gottwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Ellinger, for being here this morning. Appreciate your openness. I've had a chance to meet with you as well. I extended the same invitation to Commissioner Jessen when she was before this group last week, and I'll make the same to you. I know you can't speak on behalf of the governor necessarily, but we welcome the governor's input through you or through other channels in this process. I think it's in the best interest of the state of Minnesota for us to keep working forward. Hearing from the governor on what elements of the plan we're putting together here are objectionable or supported so that we can get our work done on time. I really hear that strongly from Minnesotans. They want us to work together to get this done now rather than kind of play bat the ball with proposals. So to the extent you can help with that or extend that invitation to the governor, I know I'll be talking with him this week as well. We welcome you at the table and helping us out solving these problems.
Chair, Representative Gottwell, we know that we have to come to some resolution, I'm hoping by the end of May, and we will certainly play our role, and we've got a lot of expertise to bring to the discussion, and we'll make that bring that forward, and we know there's going to be a lot of hard work, and our staff are ready to put in the hard work that we have to do to come to some resolution.
That's well over a month, lots of time.
Right?
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you very much.
Have a good morning. So with that, if we could revert to our staff in Article 5, and it's a lengthy article, and just to be sure we can get through it, I think if, unless there's some a person can't bear it, if we can just let them go through it. And then the Article 10 is, Senate Article 4 are relatively small, so there'll be a time for some discussion if we want to have that. So I believe Article 5 is where we'll be going, and the staff have this telepathic capacity, which I always enjoy. So whichever one is going to start, and they can just yield to themselves as they go about it.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 5 is the health care article, and as you pointed out, it is a very long article. And I'll be walking through the comparison summary. House Section 1 and Senate Section 1 established the Freedom of Choice in Health Care Act. And basically, this section sets the public policy of the state that every person within the state is and shall be free to choose or decline any mode of securing health care services without penalty or threat of penalty. Most of the language is identical or similar with a technical difference. The main differences are in Subdivision 4 dealing with enforcement. And in this section, the House provides that suspension or revocation of license as a penalty for violating the public policy. The Senate doesn't include this. The Senate, however, requires the Attorney General to take any action necessary to defend or prosecute their rights protected under this section. The House doesn't include this language. And finally, the House refers to a branch of a political subdivision. The Senate does not. The next two sections are Senate only. Sections 2 and 3 are related to this Freedom of Choice Act. Senate Section 2 requires the AG to seek injunctive and other appropriate relief to preserve the rights and property of residents of the state and to defend state officials in the event that there is a law or regulation that violates the public policy set forth in the Act. The section also requires the AG to seek injunctive and other relief in the event that public policy is enacted without adequate federal funding. Then Senate Section 3 provides that any person injured by a violation of the public policy stated in the Act may bring a civil action. The next section, House Section 2, this is related to the House defined contribution language. It sets the premium rates for a required offering of a high deductible plan. This high deductible plan is described in House Section 3. Basically requires the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association to offer a high deductible basic plan and specifies the requirements for the plan, the covered services, and the cost sharing, and so on. And this plan would be available both to defined contribution enrollees under Minnesota Care and also to MSHA enrollees generally. Moving now to House Section 4 and Senate Section 4. This basically allows individuals to enroll in the MSHA plan with a waiver of the pre-existing condition limit if they're eligible for the Minnesota Healthy Contribution Program. This language is similar, except the Senate includes a reference to the medical assistance program since they extend the defined contribution program to those groups of enrollees. Then House Section 5, this is House only. It makes a conforming change to elimination of the Legislative Commission on Healthcare Access, which is eliminated in a repealer section. Senate Section 5 is Senate only. This eliminates a portion of the medical education and research, or MERC, payments from the prepaid medical assistance capitation carve-out. House Section 6, another conforming change related to repeal of the Healthcare Access Commission. House Section 7 is House only. It provides that a healthcare provider is prohibited from billing or being reimbursed for any service that's provided to reverse, correct, or minimize the effects of an adverse health event. Then House Section 8, another conforming change to repeal of the Healthcare Access Commission. House Section 9 is House only. It allows a health plan company to limit payments to out-of-network providers to the usual and customary rate that applies to in-network providers. House Section 10, another conforming change. Then House Section 11 is House only. This basically clarifies the date on which the encounter and peer grouping data collected under Chapter 62U can be used for state programs and also private programs. House Section 12, another conforming change. Then House Section 13, House only. This basically eliminates the performance payment system that's administered by the Department of Human Services. Then House Section 14 and Senate Section 6 are identical. This implements federal program integrity audits and authorizes the commissioner to retain a contingency state share of recoveries.
Mr. Chun, hang on a second. Representative Huntley, did you have a question?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's more of a comment. There's a whole series of things starting with Section 13 that basically weaken or undo the 2008 Pawlenty health care reform. And I think we're at, when we start debating these things, that there ought to be a have the departments come in and talk about what they think about is with these changes to the reform that were done in 2008.
Well, thank you, and I think also you and I should sit down and have a chat too, so that'd be productive both ways. Thank you. Mr. Chun, you can continue.
Mr. Chair, we're now in House Section 15, which is House only. This requires the Commissioner of Human Services to cease collecting reports and data from healthcare providers unless that is necessary for federal compliance. This is effective July 1 of 2012. Also requires the Commissioner to present to the 2012 legislature draft legislation to repeal reporting requirements, and it allows the Commissioner to propose basically new provider reporting requirements, but these would sunset after 5 years. Then House Section 16, Senate Section 7, delay the rebasing of hospital payment rates under medical assistance for 6 months. This is identical. House 17 is House only. This is a low birth weight prevention initiative for hospitals located in the 7th County metro area. House Section 18, Senate Section 8 are identical. This requires the Commissioner of Human Services to modify the health care program application form to ask applicants if they are U.S. military veterans. Then House Section 19 is House only, would require the Commissioner using existing resources to provide technical assistance to county agencies in processing complex MA applications. House Section 20, this is a this is a House only provision that contingently would repeal or suspend early medical assistance if the federal government eliminates or suspends the federal match. And this is basically effective until January 1 of 2012, upon which the House would repeal early MA, and the Senate repeals early MA July 1 of 2011. Then House Sections 21 and 22 are conforming changes to the repeal of early MA coverage. House Section 23 and Senate Section 9, they're identical in that they clarify coverage of early of what is covered under early emergency medical assistance. It eliminates coverage of chronic care services. That's identical. The Senate also eliminates coverage of state-funded coverage for certain non-citizens under MA. Then Section 24 is House only. This provides MA coverage for care coordination services provided by certain pediatric hospitals. These services would be delivered either by advanced practice nurses or by registered nurses. Then House Section 25 and Senate Section 25. This is the basically the governor's evidence-based childbirth program proposal, and it's identical except for some differences in coding. Then the next several sections are Senate-only provisions. Senate Section 11 eliminates MA coverage for podiatric services. Senate Section 12 eliminates physical therapy coverage for adults and requires make some changes in authorization. Senate Section 13 eliminates occupational therapy coverage for adults, again makes changes in the authorization system. And Senate Section 14 eliminates speech-language pathology for adults. Then Senate Section 15 basically requires prior authorization for an episode of treatments of treatment and makes some other changes in the authorization system. Moving now to House Section 26, Senate Section 10. This deals with chiropractic services. The House increases the number of visits from 12 to 24 that a person can have before prior authorization is required, and the Senate repeals coverage of chiropractic services. Then House Section 27 clarifies who can provide acupuncture coverage under medical assistance. Senate Section 16 is Senate only, eliminates MA coverage for eyeglasses, dentures, and prosthetic devices. House Section 28, Senate Section 17 deal with medical assistance reimbursement for prescription drugs. They are they do the same thing in converting the payment from a formula based on average wholesale price to a formula based on wholesale acquisition cost. The difference is that the House adds or provides an extra 2% increase for independently owned pharmacies located in rural areas. And then both House and Senate are identical in setting payment rates for drugs administered in an outpatient setting and also payment rates for anti-hemophilic factor products. Then Section 29 is House only. This expands the use of medication therapy management services under MA. It expands the persons who are eligible for this. It allows persons with a drug therapy problem identified by a pharmacist and approved by the commissioner to qualify. It allows the provision of the service in home settings without an order from a provider-directed care coordination team, and expands the definition of home settings to include long-term care settings. House Section 30, Senate Section 18 are identical. They reduce non-emergency transportation rates by 4.5%. House Section 31, Senate Section 19 are identical. They reduce ambulance service rates by 4.5%. And House 32 and Senate Section 20 are also identical. They removed the phrase "a cost of" in coverage, in it specifying when MA covers the most appropriate and cost-effective form of transportation. Then Senate Section 21 is Senate only, requires the Commission to implement a modernized electronic system for providers to request prior authorization. House Section 33, Senate Section 22 are identical, require that providers secure authorization or payment from third-party payers prior to requesting payment from the state health care program. House Section 34, Senate Section 23 are identical. This changes the payment methodology for augmentative and alternative communication systems. Section 35 is House only. It would require the Commissioner of Human Services to allow payments for mental health or dental services, even if they're provided on the same day as other covered services by the same provider. Then House Section 36 is House only, provides MA coverage for in-reach community-based care coordination that's performed in a hospital emergency department. Moving to House Section 37, Senate Section 26, this is identical, and it basically limits payment for an enrollee's Medicare Part B cost sharing under MA so that it does not exceed the MA rate. House Section 38, Senate Section 27 are identical. This basically limits payments, MA payments for EPSDT services to the payment rate in effect on October 1st of 2010. Then House Section 39 is House only, provides MA coverage for advanced dental therapists and dental therapists. House Section 40, Senate Section 24 allow a recipient allow a provider to seek payment from a recipient for services that are not eligible under MA. There are technical differences only here. House Section 41, House only, makes some changes in MA cost sharing, reinstates certain co-payments that had been eliminated by a previous legislature, established a family deductible, established tiered co-payments. Then House Sections 42 and 43 are conforming changes to the cost-sharing language. House Section 44 is House only. It allows an entity that operates both a Medicare-certified comprehensive outpatient rehab facility and also a facility licensed to provide residential programs and services with a partial exemption from the state healthcare program participation requirement or Rule 101. Then Senate Sections 28 to 30 are Senate-only provisions. They eliminate physical therapy, occupational therapy, respiratory therapy, and language-speech pathology therapy from home care services and home health agency services. The next several sections, Sections 45 to 52, is House language dealing with healthcare homes. Section 45 allows mental health professionals to be personal clinicians in a healthcare home. Section 46 modifies criteria for healthcare homes. It adds reference to mental health professionals, requires coordination between social, public health, and other services. Then House Section 47 allows community mental health centers to be certified as healthcare homes. House Section 48, this would allow the commissioner, or I guess require the commissioner of health to deem federal qualified health centers and FQHC lookalikes as healthcare homes. It also allows healthcare homes generally to seek a waiver of certain certification requirements if they can meet the requirements in another way.
Mr. Chun.
Yes.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, this section on healthcare homes also undoes some things that we did in 2008, and I will say that we're going to have the department come in and tell us how this would affect the, we're one of eight states that received a pilot project on medical homes and advanced primary care, and if we pass this, how does that affect that program?
Thanks, Representative Huntley. Just to maybe help people understand some of the discussions that have gone on with the Department of Health, et cetera, with I mentioned with the commissioner. The question is, how do you help some of these groups that are almost, that were the pilots of this kind of work anyway, to be allowed to do what they did almost organically? And so there's some advice coming from the department to actually enhance it, not hurt it. So we need to sit down, you and I, and chat, too. So I think you'll see this as friendly. And it's not meant to be a poke in the eye. So, Mr. Chun, thank you.
Sure, Mr. Chair, continue with House Section 49. This would require health care homes and counties to coordinate care and services for persons with complex medical needs or disability. House Section 50, this would allow the commissioner to require state healthcare program enrollees to select a healthcare home. It required the enrollee to be allowed to choose from all qualified providers if the provider meets the participation requirements set by the healthcare home. Also provides that payments to FQHCs and FQHC lookalikes must be in compliance with federal law, meaning that it would be cost-based. House Section 51 would require healthcare homes to demonstrate that their patients and the communities of their patients participate in evaluating the healthcare home and recommending improvements and changes to the operation of the healthcare home. And I should mention that the number of these healthcare home sections were amended by the A59 amendment. So I'm reflecting the actual changes in the amendment when I describe these sections. House Section 52 would require healthcare homes to receive the highest level of healthcare of care coordination payment when they're providing services to enrollees who are receiving services from a home and community-based waiver. Then House Section 53, removing now away from healthcare homes, this would require the Commissioner of Human Services to establish a tiering system for Minnesota healthcare program providers that differentiates based on quality and cost effectiveness of care. House Section 54, these sections, I guess 54 through 60, deal with the risk gain sharing demonstration projects. House Section 54 requires the total cost of care benchmark to be no greater than the capitation rate that would otherwise be paid for the enrollee. House Section 55 requires healthcare homes and counties to coordinate care and services for persons with complex medical needs or disability. Again, the A59 amendment made some changes here. House Section 56, also House only, and establishes requirements for healthcare delivery system projects that are in rural areas, and we would require the commission to approve only one project in rural areas where multiple projects are not possible. House Section 57 would require or would allow a patient to choose a primary care provider from all qualified options. Again, would require inclusion of essential community providers and also require payment to FQHCs and lookalikes to be cost-based. House Section 58 was deleted by the A59 amendment. Then House Section 59 requires the Commissioner of Human Services to convene an advisory committee that would allow demonstration providers to effectively coordinate and deliver care. Requires commission to contract with a vendor to establish and maintain technology for the care coordination system. Then House Section 60 would require the commissioner to approve delivery form demonstration projects for MA and Minnesota care beginning January 1 of 2012. House Section 61 deals with the Hennepin and Ramsey County demonstration projects for the early MA expansion group, and given that the House would repeal coverage for this group, Section 61 should be also removed from the bill. House Section 62, this is a House-only provision. This would require the Commissioner of Human Services, Commissioner of Health, to develop and implement certification standards for pregnancy care homes. The services would be delivered beginning July 1 of 2012. Beginning July 1 of 2014, all non-emergency pregnancy care services would have to be provided through pregnancy care homes for state health care program enrollees. Subdivision 5 establishes the payment system for pregnancy care homes. House Section 63, this is also a House-only provision. It would direct the Commissioner of Human Services to require MA and Minnesota Cure enrollees without a designated medical condition to select a primary care provider from which to receive care. It would then, Subdivision 3 would then require qualified enrollees who have a medical condition designated by the Commissioner to select a healthcare home, receive primary care services through the healthcare home. It would require hospitals to receive prior authorization from the enrollee's healthcare home for these enrollees. House Section 64, this is a house-only provision, would require the Commission to prohibit payment for elective or non-emergency surgical procedures if alternative methods had not been evaluated and provided to the enrollee if appropriate. House Section 65 is house-only. It provides that coverage provided through the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs is primary to MA coverage. Then House Sections 66 to 73 deal with the prepaid medical assistance program. House Section 66 would require the DHS to involve county boards when issuing an RFP for healthcare delivery demonstration projects, allow the county board to decide on a maximum number of participating plans, and if agreement can't be reached with the commissioner on the number of plans, it would make the recommendations of a mediation panel binding on both parties. House Section 67, Senate Section 31 amend the same section, but they have a different intent. The House would require the commissioner to assign individuals who don't choose a managed care plan to any county-based purchasing plan in the area. So it's sort of a default assignment. The Senate would require the commissioner to enroll the disabled into managed care plans unless the person chooses to opt out. House Section 68, Senate Section 32 are identical. They would require the commissioner to establish a managed care performance target tied to a reduction in the rate of rehospitalization. Then House Section 69 is a House-only provision. It requires the commission to reduce the amount transferred from PMAP payments to the Medical Education and Research Fund by $4.5 million. House Section 70 is a House-only provision. It requires the managed care or county-based purchasing plan to accept into its network any health care or social service provider that agrees to terms applicable to similarly situated providers. House Section 71 is a House only, requires managed care and county-based purchasing plans to implement a progressive payment withhold methodology and to set a benchmark percentile for the return of the withhold. It also requires the Commission to reduce capitation rates by 12% for the contract year beginning January 1, 2012. It allows plans to reduce payments to providers, also allows plans to use an alternative model or method for the withhold. House Section 72 is a House-only provision, requires managed care and county-based purchasing plans to implement strategies to reduce the incidence of low birth weight in certain geographic areas. House Section 73 requires managed care and county-based purchasing plans to provide health information, wellness training, and other information to enrollees. This is a House-only provision. Then House Section 74 through 78, these are House-only, deal with county-based purchasing. House Section 74 allows a county-based purchasing plan to satisfy fiscal solvency requirements by obtaining written financial guarantees from participating counties. House Section 75 eliminates the requirement for the submittal of preliminary proposals. House Section 76 would make the decisions by a three-person mediation panel binding when there's disagreement. House Section 77 requires county boards to ensure that each enrollee has the option of choosing a primary care provider or health care home from all qualified providers. Then House Section 78 would require the commissioner, upon the request of a county or group of counties, to approve contracting on a single plan basis. This is a House-only provision. Now I'll turn things over to Ms. Kavanaugh.
OK. Continuing on page 28, Senate Section 33 is a Senate-only provision, and this establishes the Healthy Minnesota Contribution Program in the medical assistance program. This would bring in parents and children with income greater than 75% into the contribution program. This program is essentially the same as the Healthy Minnesota Contribution Program that is for in Minnesota Care in the House and the Senate, except I would point out in paragraph D that we do continue the retroactive coverage that's in medical assistance for these enrollees. On page 30, House Section 79 and Senate Section 34, this is related to the critical access dental provider section, and it's identical in both the House and Senate in that it eliminates critical access dental provider eligibility for dental clinics that are associated with an oral health or dental education program operated by the University of Minnesota or MNSCU, and requires that the dental clinic be owned or operated by these entities to qualify for the critical access dental provider eligibility. The House also prohibits rulemaking related to the critical access dental provider program, and the Senate does not. House Section 80 is a House-only provision, and this requires the commissioner to require active participation in a patient-centered decision-making process before authorization is approved or payment is made for specific procedures. House Section 81 is House only, and this requires the Commissioner of Human Services in consultation with the Commissioner of Health to contract with a Minnesota-based academic and research institution specializing in complementary and alternative medicine to implement a demonstration project to improve the care provided to MA enrollees with neck and back problems. House Section 82 and Senate Section 35, this starts the talking about the global waiver. In 82 and 35, this deals with the application process of the waiver. The House specifies a waiver application date. The Senate does not. The House refers to other provisions of federal law, and the Senate refers to the Affordable Care Act. House Section 83 and Senate Section 36, this establishes the goals for reform and the criteria for the reform program and requires reports to the governor and legislature. This, again, deals with the global waiver. These sections are identical. House Section 84 and Senate Section 37 is also global waiver sections, and this requires the commissioner to seek federal approval to enter into a five-year agreement with the federal government under a 1115 waiver to waive specific provisions of the MA law. It requires the commissioner to establish an intra-agency assessment and coordination unit. These two sections are identical with minor technical differences. House Section 85 to 88 and Senate Section 38 to 40. These sections reinstate the modified GAMC program that would deliver services through the coordinated care delivery systems. In House Section 86 and Senate Section 38, the differences here, the House reinstates the GAMC program starting January 1, 2012. The Senate reinstates it October 1, 2011, even though it says July 1, 2011. It's October 1. The House would allow county-based purchasing plans to establish CCDSs. The Senate does not. Again, the House and Senate enrollment dates differ due to the different effective dates. The Senate language on enrollee assignment includes a reference that would permit the commissioner to limit enrollments in the CCDSs. The House does not. The House requires CCDSs to give preference to health care homes when contracting and requires contracting with FQHCs. FQ, QHC lookalikes and essential community providers. The Senate doesn't have this language. The House requires the commissioner to negotiate enrollment thresholds and financial liability protections. Again, the commissioner or the senator, Senate simply allows the commissioner to do this. And the Senate exempts outpatient prescription drug coverage from the CCDS payments, and the House does not. In the House, Section 87, Senate Section 39, again, the differences, there are different payment dates, and this, again, is due to the different effective dates. The House allocates CCDS payments on basis of enrollment thresholds negotiated with the commissioner. The Senate payment system is the same as what was in place before the early expansion. It's on a prorated share based on 2009 calendar year payments to hospitals, and it retains the language increasing payments to certain specified hospitals. And also the Senate has we reestablished the prescription drug pool effective October 1, 2011, and the House does not reinstate this pool. House Section 88 is House only, and this would also, it makes a conforming change related to the county-based purchasing plans, allowing them to operate a CCDS. House Section 89 is House only, and this makes a conforming change to the reduction in Minnesota Care eligibility period from 12 to 6 months. House Section 90 is a House only. This makes a conforming change to related to the elimination of Minnesota Care eligibility for adults with income over 200% of poverty. House Section 91 is House only, makes another conforming change to the elimination of the Legislative Commission on Healthcare Access. House Section 92, House only, is another conforming change to the eligibility change for adults in the House bill. House Section 93 would require Minnesota Care enrollees to pay a family deductible and establishes tiered co-payments for non-preventive visits, and it also has a conforming change related to the change in eligibility for adults. This is House only. House only, Section 94, and Senate Section 41. This establishes the Healthy Minnesota Contribution Program. And the differences here is the House income floor for participation is 33% of poverty. The Senate, it's 75% of poverty. And the House includes reference to federal approval for families with children before that would be effective for that group. And the Senate does not. And then there are some technical differences.
Rep. Sengotwell.
Mr. Chair, just a slight correction there. I believe you said 33%, and the floor is actually 133% in the House versus 75%.
Oh, did I say 33?
Yeah.
Ooh. Thank you.
133.
It's early.
It's tough being perfect, isn't it? I don't know how you do it otherwise.
Another difference, too, is if you go down to page 37 at the end on the defined contribution amount, there is a difference in the sliding scale for the defined contribution. The Senate's base contribution ranges from 110 to 80%, and the House base contribution ranges from 150 to 80%. Otherwise, they're identical. And on page 39, House Section 95 is a House only, and this reduces the Minnesota Care income limit for adults in families with children from 275 to 200%. And it also eliminates an exemption from the program income limit for certain children who transition from MA to Minnesota Care. House Section 96 and Senate Section 42, this reduces the eligibility to Minnesota Care for single adults without children. Both the House and the Senate eliminate Minnesota Care eligibility for this group with income less than 75% of poverty, but they have different effective dates. And then the House also reduces Minnesota Care eligibility for adults without children from 250% down to 200% for an 18-month period. The Senate doesn't have this. House Section 97 is House only. This reinstates language that was repealed in a previous session that requires the commissioner to verify both earned and unearned income for Minnesota Care enrollees and verify eligibility for employee subsidized insurance. House Section 98 is House only. This requires Minnesota Care eligibility renewed every 6 months, as opposed to its current, it's every 12 months. House Section 99 is House only, makes a conforming change related to the change in eligibility for adults. House Section 100 and Senate Section 43, this requires the commissioner to ensure that all Minnesota Care applicants with incomes less than 33% who identify themselves as veterans are referred to a county veteran service officer for assistance in applying for any VA benefits for which they are eligible. These sections are identical. House Section 101 is House only. This reinstates in law the $50,000 income limit for parents under Minnesota Care. It also makes some conforming changes. House Section 102 is House only. This makes some conforming changes with the eligibility for adult change. House Section 103 requires Minnesota Care enrollees to maintain a residence at a verified address other than a place of public accommodation unless that place is the person's primary or only residence. House Section 104 and Senate Section 44 are identical, and they reduce Minnesota Care payments to the critical access dental providers from 50% to 30% above the regular payment rate. House Section 105 and Senate Section 45 are identical, and they require the commissioner to include as a performance target under Minnesota Care a reduction in the plan's rate of subsequent hospitalizations within 30 days of a previous hospitalization by 5%. House Section 106 is House only. This requires the commissioner to include information about Minnesota Care premium payment options on each premium notice. House Section 107 and Senate Section 46. These sections reduce the aggregate administrative cost limits for managed care and county-based purchasing plans. The House reduces this to 6.1%, and the Senate reduces it to 5.3%. House Section 108 and Senate Section 47, this reduces the transfers from the Health Care Access Fund to the general fund related to early MA expansion. And there are different transfer amounts involved here. House Section 109 is House only, and this requires the Commissioner of Human Services to suspend implementation and administration of the early MA expansion for adults without children and refers these individuals to the reinstated GAMC program. And the House repeals the early expansion starting October 1st, 2011. House Section 110 and Senate Section 52. This is the effective date for reinstating the GAMC program. The House and Senate have different dates. House is January 1, 2012. The Senate is 10-1-2011. House Section 111 is House only. This requires the Commissioner of Human Services to submit to the legislature by December 15, 2011, a plan to provide care coordination to MA and Minnesota Care enrollees who are children with high-cost mental health conditions. House Section 112 is House only. This requires the Commissioner to develop and provide to the legislature a methodology and draft legislation necessary to allow the release upon request of summary data on claims and utilization for state health care programs to research institutions to conduct analysis of health care outcomes and treatment effectiveness. House Section 113 is House only, and this requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to convene a report reduction work group, and it requires the Commissioners of Health, Human Services, and Commerce to reduce, eliminate, or consolidate state-mandated reports according to the plan that the work group comes up with. and it requires that a report be given to the legislature on the activities and the results of this report reduction project. House Section 114 and Senate Section 48 requires the Commissioner of Human Services to establish a competitive bidding price bidding pilot for non-elderly, non-disabled adults and children in MA and Minnesota care in the seven-county metropolitan area for two calendar years. And the difference here is the House requires the Commissioner to consult with other states. The Senate does not. Otherwise, they're identical. House Section 115 is House only. It requires the Commissioner to issue a request for proposal to identify abnormal provider billing patterns. House Section 116 is House only. This requires the Commissioner through the Health Services Policy Committee to develop a process to limit payments to health professionals for services for which they are not trained to deliver in a high-quality manner. It requires a report to the legislature. It also requires the Commissioner to study the effectiveness of new strategies for wound care treatment and report to the legislature. House Section 117 is House only. It requires the Commissioner to evaluate whether providing MA coverage for specialized maintenance therapy will reduce rates of hospitalization for enrollees with serious and persistent mental illness and report to the legislature. House Section 118 is House only. This requires the Commissioner to develop and present to the legislature a plan to redesign service delivery for Minnesota Care enrollees who are adults without children or families and children with incomes less than 133% of poverty. House Section 119 and Senate Section 49 requires the Commissioner to apply for federal waivers for the implementation of the Healthy Minnesota Contribution Program for families with children. And the Senate refers to children and families who are eligible for medical assistance, and the House does not. And then the House has their paragraph B, which is related to the global waiver. The Senate does not have this language. House Section 120 is House only. This requires the Commissioner, when negotiating with vendors to provide managed care services, to require the use of an advance request for information tool to provide DHS with an evidence-based assessment of the cost control, quality, and information transparency of the vendor. House 121 is House only. This requires the Commissioner for services provided on or after January 1, 2012 to establish risk corridors for each managed care and county-based purchasing plan that requires a portion of any net underwriting gain above a threshold to be repaid to the Commissioner, and a portion of any net underwriting loss below a threshold to be paid by the Commissioner. Senate Section 50 is Senate only, and this requires the Commissioner to issue a request for proposals to prevent and detect Medicaid fraud. Senate Section 51 is Senate only, and this prohibits state funds to be expended in the planning or implementation of the Affordable Care Act, and states that no provisions of this act may be implemented until the constitutionality of the act has been affirmed by the United States Supreme Court. And then House Section 122 is Senate Section 53. These are the repealers. House only repealers in paragraphs A through U, and these all are Minnesota Care provisions that have not been approved by the federal government, and that they are then repealing. Senate only repealers, Senate repeals chiropractic services, home care therapies, the Hennepin and Ramsey County pilot program, and then two subdivisions in the outdated GMC that are outdated that are in the GMC law. And then we also repeal the early expansion, the MA early expansion. And I believe that's it.
That's pretty good. You guys can take a breath now. Any questions about Article 5 from members of Senate? Lady, you had it. Okay. Senator Hand, you want to? We have a great deal of discussion to go on at some point as we discuss the different approaches taken by the two bodies, which is not going to happen today, but that's yet to be discussed and how we're going to handle that. And, so I think let's move on to the next article, which that is Article 10, is that right? Let's do Article 10 then, and the staff can just jump into that however they're going to go about that.
Mr. Chair and members, the Article 10 in the House and Article 9 in the Senate are the Human Services Forecast Adjustments. These are just the number changes for appropriations for last year for the forecasted programs, and there is no language to go over.
Okay. That's pretty easy. Any questions about no language to go over? although the... we have to, if we don't approve this, then they don't happen. So it's, at some point we have to do this, even though it is, got it. And but so it's not just technical, but it's really complicated.
And Mr. Chair, they're identical from what I can tell.
All right. More examples of House and Senate agreement. Always happy to hear that. So any questions about Article 10 and the breakthrough agreement that we've talked about today? And then there's a Senate-only article, which is, mine's in Korean, I can't read what's the Article 4, thank you, my staff thought it'd be funny to do that to me, so. Senate Article 4, who's going to do that?
Mr. Chair and members, Article 4 is a Senate-only article, and it's the Department of Human Services licensing article.
Okay.
Section 1. Strike state-operated services programs from the list of programs exempt from a licensing fee. Section 2 allows an applicant for a license for a private agency to provide foster care or adoption services to submit a single application to provide the services statewide. Section 3 is the main section in this article, and it modifies the licensing bill fees, and it establishes new licensing fees. Section 4 provides that the commissioner shall plan to fully recover direct expenditures for licensing activities over a five-year period. Section 5 establishes the human services licensing account in the state government special revenue fund, and the fees collected must be deposited into the account and annually appropriated to the commissioner for licensing activities. Section 6 and 7 allow are from an outlier bill, Senate File 254, allows an adult foster care license holder to provide family adult daycare for adults 18 or over instead of 55 years of age or over. Section 8 requires the commissioner to recover the cost of background studies for all programs licensed by the commissioner except child foster care and family child care. Section 9 requires the commissioner to seek a waiver. This is related to Senate File 254 also. Requires the commissioner to seek a federal waiver to seek a federal waiver approval for Medicaid reimbursement of family adult day services under all disability waivers. And after the waiver is granted, the commissioner shall include family adult day services in the common services menu that is currently under development. And Section 10 repeals the existing licensing fees, which is replaced by a section in this article.
Thank you. Any questions about that? I have a question for staff. You mentioned the word outlier bill. Is there any other human services bills that have... We haven't passed a lot of bills off either floor this year. There's the Schumacher-Rosen bill that's moving. Is there any other outlying human service language that's around that's passed either body except for these? I thought so. And at some point, we'll have to sit down with Senator Hand and I and discuss how we're going to handle some of the policy bills, and they become part of this if they stay separate. And there's a few things yet to be decided. Target, we have to figure that out. And, scheduling. Actually, we've covered all the side-by-sides. Are there any questions about anything that we've covered from any of the senators or representatives? any clarification staff thinks we need to make about any of those things as we put the side-by-side comparison to Representative Gottwald.
Please don't demote me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention, in relationship to your earlier comment about other bills that might be out there, of course, this is the finance omnibus. We do anticipate doing a policy reform omnibus bill through our committee, and I've been in preliminary discussions with Senator Hahn about how we'll work that on the Senate side, too. But there will be an omnibus policy bill for several provisions that do not have dollars involved in them.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Representative Gottwald and I have talked a little bit about this outside the committee, but as you know, we do not have a separate policy committee in the Senate, but there are some agency bills that we need to deal with, and those might be another separate bill. I'm not quite sure how we're going to, if we're going to have one bill or multiple bills that do not have finance implications, but our intent is to work with Representative Gottwald and his committee to produce at least one other bill that would be policy-oriented.
Yeah. Very good. And, of course, those deadlines are moving along on us as well. You all have a new spreadsheet. Did everybody see that in your packets? The fiscal notes continue to be refined, and they're reflected in this. Mr. Walls, are there any changes beyond the Merck? Also, there's been no fiscal notes updated since. Okay. So the 59 amendment is reflected here. We thought that it would be productive to include that. And also, what page is that Minnesota Choice thing? 12. On page 12 of the spreadsheet, there's a new moniker for the House's effort to get flexibility from the federal government on how to. That's on line 783. And we're referring to our global waiver now as a Minnesota Choice option. And I was thinking we'd go through it, but just there's so much going on that there's a handout people can look at on that topic. The acronym CHOICE stands for Consumer Health Opportunities and Innovative Care Excellence. And I think I have to commend staff for helping come up with that. That's, I think, is a really productive way to describe this. I'm just fighting the temptation to go through another 15 pages, 15 plates, whatever it is, of information about this. But this has been passed out, and I'm glad it was. We'll be discussing it at a later time. It's we're still in the overview stage, but I'd like to point out that there's some meat on the bones of this. That is a very real proposal. It's actually catching the interest of some various parties. With the move in Washington toward, on the GOP side, toward block grants, and as part of their budget agreement, which actually at least the one entity has approved it, I think, and how they see that as being some help. And I would just have an inclination on the part of the Obama administration to be somewhat reticent to do that, just how things seem to work out there. It seems like giving states of the quality of Minnesota with their interest and experience these sort of choice options and focusing on outcomes as opposed to simply centralized methodologies. I think there's some very productive dialogue to be had about that. This is only a draft, but my method is to include people as early as we can in real ideas. And I'm convinced, and the Senate has another version of the same idea, a little bigger version, that if we don't move in this direction, we'll be unable to serve the people who count on us for our services 4 years and 8 years from now. And we'll be discussing in the four-year from now version of this committee in this very room, maybe different people at the chairs, how on earth to rescue the services for these people who are going to face disparate and desperate times. At this point, we are only challenged, but the harms that are that those individuals that we care so much about would be subjected to, as we are unable to tame delivery methods and choose alternative care choices, puts us in terrible harm's way. I'm personally convinced we're 6 to 8 years late on this. But we're 4 years earlier than 4 years from now. Look this over. We'll be having testimony and discussion about this. But I'm absolutely convinced that the Minnesota Consumer Health Opportunities and Innovative Care Excellence idea has merit, and we need to pursue it with vigor. That's just the comment about this, and so that saved you 20 minutes of going through plate by plate. I do hope that the public will engage with myself and Senator Hand on how we can make this work and how to promote this. And there's many things to discuss about that, but I just want to tell you that I'm absolutely serious about this. Otherwise, the choice is if you don't like this, there will be certainly some rate changes in the out year, and some very challenging bodings of things to come in the future years, which no one seems to want. So help us out here. Senator Hand, do you want to offer any comment to that? You want to give us a preview of? Oh, just one thing else. On the spreadsheet, and then we'll talk about the week to come, and then I think we're going to be done here unless somebody else wants to talk about something. The new spreadsheets, we have not got a joint target yet, and I don't know if it's going to approach the House target or the Senate target or be an entirely new one. Those are discussions beyond my pay grade. You can see the totals, and I think given the math that came in, I think the House is $7 million light off its target that it was given, because some dish money came in later that we thought was worth a little less than we thought. And I see the Senate has a target that's a light of its number as well, but then they took care of the health care access fund. So I think we're both bills are very close to being balanced. And then when the target comes, we'll have to provide a way to balance in some way that we'll agree upon. So that's what I have to comment about today. Senator, you want to give a view, a forecast of the upcoming week after the break?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, and members. As you know, we are not going to be in session the rest of this week after 3 o'clock this afternoon. I suspect there will be conversations going on among members of the conference committee as we think about coming back into session the following week. At this point, I do not have a date that we would reconvene this committee. I expect it to be early in the week, but I do not have a firm date yet. We'll send notices out to everybody to let you know in advance when that would be. But I think one thing that we need to contemplate is perhaps moving forward with the large number of areas of agreement that are between the two bills. We may want to take some action at some point to accept that into the conference report. We may also want to address some of the issues where we have substantial agreement, maybe some minor differences, and we might be able to make some progress there and try to focus on the areas where there is a substantial difference between the House and Senate bills that would be the bulk of the work. Obviously, we need to wait to, before we finalize our report to, on what the target might be. And just to reiterate what Chairman Abler had mentioned early on, we are certainly hoping and expecting that the governor or his staff and or his staff would be willing to engage with us as we go through this process to help us to take into consideration the concerns and suggestions the administration has about the final bill. It would be our hope, I think, and I don't want to speak for the House side, but certainly from the Senate side, that we find a way to work together. We've got 5 weeks to do this, and rather than pass a number of bills out of a conference committee and go through that exercise, it would be perhaps more fruitful to work together with the governor and his office to find ways to reach compromise as we go forward before we close out the conference. So that's I don't have much of any firm date to inform you, but it will be early in the week following this week. And we'll let you know as soon as we get that nailed down. But I think we need to have some discussion about what the agenda will be and how we'll proceed going forward.
And, Senator, so just to reiterate, we will not be meeting anytime through Monday. And so the next meeting would be at the earliest on Tuesday sometime. And there's the challenge with your policy committee that you have to attend to, and so on. So just so you can know, you've got a week off. You get to break as well. So I suggest that the public scrutinize. You know, all the, we've gone through all the side by sides. You can spend your Easter week and Passover week studying the detail of the two proposals. Any other comments for the good of the order, Representative Huntley, others? With that, happy Easter and Passover, and we are adjourned.